Doug Roberts, welcome to Your Money Radio.
Good morning, Chuck. How are you this morning?
Well, you know, it's a little bit early on the day after Halloween, but I think we're all happy on the day after the Fed cuts. Let's go the other way. We got our treat yesterday when the Fed did exactly what we expected it to do. I don't think they didn't give us full-sized candy. You know, they didn't do what they had done last time and supersize it for us, but they gave us exactly the sweetener that I think people were looking for. And the real question that I've got for you is that obviously your strategy in following the Fed is a little bit different than most. I mean, I hear a lot of people say don't fight the Fed, but explain for my audience, if you would, what it is that your strategy entails and how it works, and okay, how crazy it's got to be for you on the day after the Fed makes a move and you're trying to follow it.
Well, our standard strategy really divides the world into two things, large stocks and small stocks. Large stocks, if you look at really the S&P 500, and then small stocks where there are a variety of indices out there like the Russell 2000, which you, again, can buy mutual funds to track or ETFs to track as well. Those are the two things that we feel matter the most, because actually small stocks over the long term outperform large stocks by a little over 2%. That doesn't sound like much, but if you compound that over time, that's a massive advantage. And research out there, Jack Bogle has done some, other people have done some, show that a 2% advantage that can consistently be maintained over time is nothing short of amazing. The only problem with small stocks is the outperformance is in very, very short time periods. As a matter of fact, if you exclude over the last 79 years, the top five performing years in small stocks, small stocks totally lose their advantage.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is then, how do you find out when small stocks are outperforming? And that's where the Fed comes in. What we find is periods of time when the Fed is injecting a lot of liquidity into the market, making money and credit quite easy. We've seen that in the last couple of years. Small stocks can take off like a rocket ship. And we use the Fed to determine how to do that. How do we do that? Well, you mentioned using the Fed to determine when to be in the market. What we really find is these periods of high liquidity are when you should be in small stocks. And if you do that, you find that you can maintain that outperformance, that 2% outperformance that we're talking about in small stocks without a lot of the volatility bouncing up and down. The way we do that is we look at when really there are periods of high liquidity. We find that when, pretty simple ratio, when actually the rate of inflation is actually greater than the short-term cost of borrowing, which we use treasury bills as a, when you look at those time periods, that's when you want to be in small stocks. There aren't that many of them. It doesn't change that quickly, so it's not like you're constantly trading and churning your portfolio and running those costs. And the great thing about it is you can actually use low-cost index funds, so you can outperform almost all of the Wall Street experts using low-cost index funds without having to devote a great deal of time trading your portfolio and following stocks. That's the beauty of the situation. And for most of the population out there who does have a life, who has a real job, who can't afford to be day trading or trading their portfolio, there are people who are very good at it. I'm not taking that away. I'm just saying it's very, very difficult for most people with the life they live. Otherwise, the only other alternative is to really go and get a money manager who pays, you know, is going to charge you a substantial fee with no guarantee of any outperformance over the S&P.
Well, and you talk about, okay, a period where inflation is greater than the Treasury bill rate.
Correct.
Okay. Well, one of the interesting things, and we see it all the time, but I think we got away from it during the early 2000s, but we're certainly hearing about it now, is that every time the Fed right now is cutting rates, you get a lot of backlash about what might or might not be going on with inflation. We're not at that point right now where inflation is greater than the Treasury rate, but there's a lot of concern that we could be quickly. So does this mean that we're rooting, I mean, how does it play out in terms of what you're hoping for if you want to get to that spot where we're at a small cap sweet spot?
Well, I guess hope in the parlance of a Wall Streeter is a dirty four-letter word. You really don't want to get too involved with it. You want to be in sync with the Fed, because if you try to tell the Fed what it should do and what it shouldn't do, you can get into some severe problems. The key thing is to watch what they are doing and then make sure you're in sync with it. In terms of inflation popping up, there's a possibility of that. That's why right now our current stance is moderately in favor of large cap stocks, because you're 100% correct. If the Fed continues to lower rates and inflation continues to pop up, we could have a small cap advantage. But you really have to, that's where the outperformance is, and I guess in some ways you would be rooting for it. But you have to really go with what's on the menu versus what you'd like to be on the menu.
Okay. So, good point. And I probably shouldn't have said we're rooting for it. We're just looking. What we're truly doing here is using it as the indicator that now's the time to buy or now's the time to sell.
Correct.
Okay. That being the case, should somebody be entirely out of small caps now if they're using a follow the Fed strategy? Or do they want to say, okay, this is one of those periods where I want to be in the asset class, but I know I'm not getting that outperformance? I mean, as you pointed out, small caps give you this benefit if you hold them. So to me, one of the things is always, if you want the benefit, you got to buckle up and ride the ride. If you talk about index funds, and I love index funds, but they're not for everybody because you're strapping yourself to the market and you're going to get the good, the bad, and the ugly, and not everybody can ride. We can all agree the roller coaster may be the best ride in the amusement park, but that doesn't mean that everybody can ride it. They get scared. They don't want to do the dips. They don't want to do whatever. When we're talking about your strategy, is it a full... Is there a difference between the one that says, okay, I'm going to use this as an indicator and I'm either going to maybe tilt my portfolio a little bit, or are we going whole hog in and out? Because, as you point out, you're moderately in favor of large cap stocks right now. But how much tilting are we doing, and how much of an indicator is this for people? Is it telling them, yes, you should be buying or selling, or is it simply telling them, hey, you're now at that spot where since you rode out the trough in small caps, now you're getting to the spot where we'd expect things to get better?
That depends on the individual. Some people just use it as part of their portfolio. And let's say if you have a fixed allocation between small caps and large cap stocks, this kind of indicates really on the margin which direction you want to tilt it. Maybe let's say if you have an allocation to both, you might want to increase your allocation to large caps, decrease it to small caps. But, you have to understand with this, we're not talking about a huge number of changes. Roughly in the last 79 years, you've only had, approximately 26 changes. So you're only talking about a little change over roughly every 3 years. That's not a great amount of activity in your account. But the one thing that I think you emphasize pretty clearly, and you're correct on that, is 35 changes over the last 79 years, so roughly a little over 2 years, this is something for the long-term investor. If you're looking, for a short period of time, like less than 5 years, then, you're talking about something more of a trading mentality, which has its own set of costs and risks. But this is something for, let's say, somebody who has a retirement plan, and they're talking about 10 years away or more. Somebody who set up, let's say, a college fund for their kids, when they're born, or maybe they have a retirement fund where they're talking a distant time in the future, and what they want to do is they want to take advantage of long-term growth. And sometimes the numbers can be pretty amazing. Over that 79 years, using this strategy, you're talking about a situation where $10,000 over 79 years can be turned into $140 million. That's a pretty amazing number. So let's say if you just establish a fund or when your child's born, instead of holding, a huge thing and getting a baby bassinet for them, register at Chase Manhattan, have them put some money into an account for him or her, and then just invest that using the strategy again, not generating a lot of trading activity. By the time that child retires, he can have a huge nest egg built up.
Our guest here on Your Money Radio is Doug Roberts. He is with Channel Capital Research, and we are talking about the Follow the Fed strategy. If you want more information on the firm, channelcapitalresearch.com, just like it sounds, or you can, in the alternative, check out followthefed.com and get more information. When we're looking at this strategy, the obvious thing here is that, you know, we want to be taking a close look at what the Fed does. Do we ever do any anticipating? I mean, how good's your crystal ball when you take a look at what the Fed's doing right now?
We don't really anticipate. I mean, I look at it from a point of view as I like to I have a desire to understand what's going on. I mean, how I developed this strategy was I just thought that there was a simpler way, and I had been in business as well as on Wall Street. And I found that really the availability of money and credit as a small business owner dramatically affected my ability to grow and prosper. And that was really what led me to the strategy. But I look at where the Fed's going into the future, but really the strategy looks at where the Fed is now. And you don't really need to have a crystal ball to see for this strategy to work.
And when you take a look, and we do have a lot of people very concerned. I mean, when you take a look out right now, do you see the side that says, okay, we're going to see a continued easing of interest rates, and you think that the Fed's going to be able to skirt the inflation problem? Or do you think they're going to where you're going to get that signal that, hey, it's time to act on small caps because the follow the Fed strategy has been, you know, triggered here?
I think inflation, and the Fed does as well, they distinguish between core inflation and top-line inflation, which, for those of our viewers, core inflation excludes the costs of food and energy. And the reason why they do that is, in the short term, short of putting the economy into a recession, there's very little the Fed can do about that. So really, I guess a better term for core inflation would be the inflation level that the Fed can actually influence in the short term by monetary policy. The Fed, of course, could clamp down on inflation totally, but that would involve putting in the economy into a severe recession, which I think everybody's determined that that's a high price to pay, or too high a price to pay, for dampening inflation in the short term. So I think, oil prices are going to move independently. Much of it's going to be dependent upon really whether there's a supply shock, whether there's a war, let's say, in one of the Gulf countries that interrupts supply. That's typically what we found causes inflation, and that's not really something the Fed's monetary policy can interfere with. But absent that, you're seeing it, even if there's a slight bit of inflation, we'd rather have that with a strong economy than, let's say, a weakened economy with no inflation. So my belief is that the Fed's actions are going to be dictated by the strength of the economy, because that's part of its mission. And as long as the economy continues to deteriorate, and the key number for everybody to watch is really the employment numbers.
Right.
Because one of the things you have to realize is the housing situation is very, very concerning to the Fed. But for the most part, people will continue to keep their house, make payments on it, do whatever they need to do as long as they're employed and have a job. The problem becomes is when they lose their jobs, then there's really nothing they can do. You can see foreclosures jump quite massively, and then that can lead to people cutting back on consumption, and then the economy weakening even further, which leads to a vicious cycle. So that's why what you're seeing is the Fed action in terms of the 50 basis point decrease that they took before. That shift in position came out shortly after you had that negative unemployment report, which was unexpected.
Right, exactly.
It was subsequently revised upwards and was more benign. But really, that's where the Fed, kind of looks at the numbers. So if you want to have something of a crystal ball, you want to take a look at that employment numbers. And I think as long as employment continues to weaken and inflation doesn't get totally out of control, I'm talking about on a core level, as long as it stays moderate, you'll see the Fed continue to do what's necessary to address that level. That's why yesterday was somewhat of a perfect storm for the Fed, because core inflation numbers came in, you know, quite benign, but at the same time, the economy with the GDP number looked to be much stronger than people anticipated. So the Fed kind of cut 25 basis points as insurance, left themselves open into the future that they may cut more if necessary, but didn't give any indication that that was the direction they were going.
But well, and we'll have to watch it play out, but of course our investors and our audience will know that one way they might be able to tilt is by following the Fed and using it as an indicator of when there's going to be small cap strength, particularly in the market. Doug Roberts from Channel Capital Research and followthefed.com. Thanks for joining us. We'll be right back with Greg Rennie's Weekly Money Tip.